Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Dr. Carl is our Australian science communicator. He joins us every Wednesday. We've got some great questions for him this morning. Dr. Carl, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you, Dr. Howard. Lovely to be with you again.
So Jeff sent us the following question, and it's really an interesting one. A few years ago, during a soccer match at Ellis Park, that's here in Johannesburg, there was a lightning strike. All the players were knocked down, but nobody was killed. The given explanation was that they were running and only had one foot on the ground, which prevented the lightning from passing through their bodies via their heart. Can this explanation be true?
Not really. You can still get damaged with only one foot on the ground. Where you are really in trouble is when you have 2 feet on the ground a significant distance apart and a lightning bolt hits the ground off to one side. The leg that's in contact with the ground, and it is closer to the lightning bolt, it might have an electric field of, say, 1,000,000 volts per meter. And the other leg, a bit further away, might be 3/4 of 1,000,000 volts per meter. So therefore, the electric field passing through the heart is 1,000,000 minus 3/4 of a million, which is 1/4 of a million. However, if the lightning passes through your body and then goes to the ground and goes through your heart along the way, you can get killed even if you only got 1 foot on the ground.
Right.
So you're a little bit safer. In this case, it was mainly just the luck of the draw. It is said that what you should try to do is have only 1 foot on the ground, and that is the preferred mode and improves your chances a little bit, but people have still been killed under those similar circumstances. So lightning is relatively dangerous. Doesn't kill that many people a year, fewer than sharks, but then people are more scared of sharks than they are of lightning.
Actually, I'm
so the answer is a definite maybe.
Lightning. It's just one of my things. I'm absolutely petrified of it. I don't know why. But you see, and that's probably why I've never been a soccer player. And then Bruce wants to know, good morning, Howard and team. Please can you ask Dr. Carl how and why our perception of time changes as we get older? Is this a thing? It definitely is.
Yeah, well, I remember when I was a kid, they were going, and I was about five, and they were going to do a bridge, build a bridge somewhere. They, the council, were going to build a bridge, and it was going to happen in 1 year's time. And that was such an impossibly long time away. It was 1/5 of my entire life. But then as you get older, it goes from, say, 20% to 10% to 5% and so forth. So you've got more experience that you've run through in your brain and your body, and each successive moment is successively a shorter percentage of your total life.
So that really does make sense. I hope we've answered those questions. Some other questions for you, Dr. Carl. Does intermittent fasting actually work to reduce weight?
It's claimed that it does, but there have never been any really good studies. Most of the intermittent fasting relies on the fact that in our historical past, over the last couple of 100,000 years, we've had only guaranteed assured food for a very short time. And so we would have gone through intermittent fasting of not just minutes or hours, but even days at a time back in the old days. But on the other hand, hunter-gatherers are really pretty good at providing food to themselves. And so this claim that we would go without food for days at a time is not that strong. Another part of the claim, another variation on intermittent fasting, is that you don't eat for, say, 5 or 8 or 9 hours during the day. And that sort of study has been done and then tested out long-term, and it doesn't show to make any long-term difference in body weight. Sure, no matter what diet you've got, you will lose some weight in the short term. One bad thing that has happened is that with the so-called intermittent fasting, they say, oh, eat whatever you like. Well, that is not a good start to a long-term plan. You don't want to eat rubbish, you know, 100% fried food with lots of salt and just alcohol. No, you want to have a balanced diet with fats and proteins and carbohydrates and minerals and fiber. And so the injunction to just eat whatever you like for 3 days and then fast for another day, it doesn't really cut it. And long term, the diet doesn't seem to have any long term weight reduction.
And the importance of anticipation in making your daily or future life better.
Yeah, it's surprising. It does turn out that anticipation can help you enjoy life better. So anticipating something can, like, and it can be something as little as I'm going to meet the friends tonight, or we're going to have a special hat party today for no good reason because there's no good parties coming up. We'll just make one up. Anticipation leads to an improvement in your mood and reduction in stress. Connecting with your future self can both improve your health and your ethics. And to help you get there, you can do a... Sorry, go on.
That's interesting, with your ethics?
Yes. So you, because you're taking a longer-term view in the future rather than in the here and now in the past, you tend to look at the consequences of what you're doing and how that will affect people who you are with and whom you are around. And then that improves your future quality of life. You also do a thing called temptation bundling, where you've got something you don't want to do, like going to the gym, but there's this podcast that you really want to listen to. So you say, okay, I'll listen to the podcast while I'm in the gym, or read this book, or hear this audio book. And then that way you can give yourself a gentle bribe. And surprisingly, you get more happiness from anticipating an experience than you do from anticipating the arrival of a physical good. So the whole anticipation thing is now working out to be a much bigger part of our future lives than we had previously thought. Unfortunately, you can get anticipation anxiety where you're worried about something like getting married or your first child. And this can be very bad if the anxiety is high and the anticipation is low. And the thing is just to embrace the anxious arousal as sort of excitement. Feel it as a good thing rather than a bad thing.
You almost convert that negative feeling of anxiety to something positive. You instead of seeing it as a negative, you try and focus on that, the excitement part of it.
Yeah, you can reverse the anxiety into the anxiety into excitement by doing self-talk, saying, I'm excited, I'm having a one, or get excited. And then that makes you feel more excited. And as you say, put yourself into a more positive mindset where you have an opportunity mindset as opposed to a threat mindset. And then that makes your performance in life just that little bit better.
Absolutely, absolutely fascinating. Dr. Carl, the amount of information that you've given us in such a short while this morning, truly astounding. It is about to go 7:30. Thank you as always. We'll catch you next week at the same time. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.